Thank you, Robert. Soloists who are chosen for the opening concert of the annual Blossom Music Festival, now in its sixth season, are invariably artists of consequence and unusual distinction. That the one appearing in this concert is also a dear friend of so many of us only makes the situation more pleasurable. I must admit at this point to a mixture of joy and embarrassment, for Eunice Potis and I have been sharing for some years the interviews with artists appearing in our Women's Committee special programs, and for me to interview her is a kind of incestuous situation with the implicit danger that she may wish to take revenge sometime by interviewing me.
I'll interview the interviewer. Then you'll be sorry.
That aside, we are, of course, delighted to welcome to this program Eunice Potis. Eunice, if I may call you so, you hold among your many distinctions one not shared by anyone else, the absolute and unchallengeable record in the number of appearances with the Cleveland Orchestra. We have counted nearly 100 concerts you have played with this ensemble since that first time in 1941, when you were still in your teens. How do you feel about the fact that nobody, but nobody, is going to be able to match this?
Well, I'm not sure that it's unmatchable. I think there are several people who are threatening to catch up with me, but I feel that as long as I remain a resident artist and I have the advantage of being around, that I still have a good chance of maintaining the lead. Actually, it has been a very great privilege and a thrill for me to have so many opportunities to appear with this great orchestra. And I may say that it never becomes just a routine affair. My appearance today with Lauren Mazel and the Cleveland Orchestra is one of the most exciting experiences of my career. It's always a great thrill and always a brand new experience somehow, no matter how many times you've played with the ensemble or even played the very same concerto.
You've played at Blossom about a half a dozen times before,
Several times, yes, but not on the festival series, and that was a great thrill for me.
Of course, these 100 appearances that we count are in many different series. There were about 9 or 10 in the regular weekend pairs at Severance Hall. There are the Pops, there's other summer concerts, there are specials, there are tours. And of course, this also means that your repertoire must be very extensive, because you really don't repeat from time to time.
Oh, I have performed, I would say, well over a dozen different concertos with this orchestra.
I beg to differ. It's over 20.
Oh, thank you. You're my keeper of the statistics. I'm also happy to say that it has been a great opportunity to appear under many different conductors, going all the way back to Artur Rudzinski and Rudolf Ringwall, who were the first conductors with whom I appeared with this orchestra. And, of course, people like Mr. Zell, Louis Lane, and some guest conductors. So it has really given me a wide variety of experience.
Let's see whether we can remember, without any records, what the pieces were that you have played. All right. There's the Rachmaninoff number 2. You've also played number 3.
Number 3 with Milton Kadams,
right,
who was a guest conductor.
About 1962. Tchaikovsky number 1.
Oh, while we're on Rachmaninoff, let's not forget
the Paganini Rhapsody.
Yes, that's
course.
A great favorite of mine. And I must say, I performed that for the first time under rather unusual circumstances. You know, when one is young, one does some rather insane things. And when I was asked to submit repertoire for a summer concert, ahead of time, I rather casually threw out a list, including the Rachmaninoff Rhapsody on a theme of Paganini, which I not only had never performed, didn't even own the score of. And I happened to be away in New Orleans performing on their summer series when I received a telegram from, I think it was Mr. Barksdale, the then manager of the orchestra, saying, "We have decided on the Rachmaninoff Rhapsody and you will play it," naming a date 3 weeks from the time I received the telegram.
All of 3 weeks, that's plenty of time.
Well, I rushed back to Cleveland and purchased a copy of the music and got to work. And as I say, well, you do this when you're very young and you really don't give it a thought. It came off rather well. We had a broadcast following that, and I think I did perform it several times afterward.
Yes, I recall, and it went very well. Nobody would have known that it was a new piece to you. Well, then we have Tchaikovsky number 1. You haven't done the other two,
no.
I take it. The Cacciatorian Concerto was one of your early triumphs, right?
Well, yes, that was a great thrill because I played that with Mr. Sell. And while it was not the sort of work that he normally embraced with great pleasure, I must say he did a wonderful job accompanying that, and we did it not only at Severance Hall, we took it on tour. I remember playing it with great success in Hartford, Connecticut, and elsewhere.
Then there was, of course, the Concerto in F by Gershwin, probably also the Rhapsody in Blue.
Oh, very definitely, many
the
times.
The Grieg Concerto a number of times. Did you ever do Schumann?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, Schumann. And then we mustn't neglect Beethoven. I've done the third a number of times with the orchestra, and I did the fourth at least on one occasion, I think, with Lewis Lane conducting.
There was also the Peter Menin Piano Concerto, which is really the most extraordinary occurrence in that whole long career because it brought you to New York with the orchestra.
Yes, that was my only appearance with the Cleveland Orchestra at Carnegie Hall in New York, and that was another rather wild story. Mr. Menin had been commissioned to compose a concerto for the orchestra's 40th anniversary season, I believe it was. And like most composers, pardon me, Klaus, he was inclined to procrastinate.
Sure.
So that instead of having the score at the beginning of the season, as we had hoped, I received it in installments, beginning with the last movement. We were scheduled to perform this, I think, in February.
Well, there's extra interest in installments, isn't there?
You pay a price for it, though.
Yes.
So in December, I got the last movement and began to learn that avidly. A few weeks later, I received the second movement and then the last half of the first movement, and it wasn't until January that I knew how the piece began. Mr. Zell was very understanding and very helpful, and he said, now you don't have to play this from memory because there was scarcely a month before the concert was scheduled. But I was still inclined to be a little bit rash, and so I did memorize it, and we played it in Cleveland and then at Carnegie Hall in New York with, I think, a very nice success.
You are what they call a fast learn.
Well, one has to be sometimes,
yes.
You know. I'm fascinated. At the moment, I'm reading Arthur Rubinstein's biography, and, of course, this is the sort of thing that he did all the time, and as he admits very freely, got away with murder. So many interesting little things come to mind from that book. You know, I've been doing a lot of technical practice this summer because I feel that when one teaches, it's important to be able to do the things that you expect the students to do. And so as I practice scales, I think of Mr. Rubinstein's comment. He hated to practice scales, and he said he always felt as if he were cleaning the teeth of the piano.
That's charming.
But since
it's
I'm a dentist's
like
daughter, I don't mind doing that.
Eunice, you've appeared with many major orchestras in this country. You've won many noted awards. You've toured Europe with sensational success, and you've given innumerable recitals. You have also been artist in residence at the Cleveland Institute of Music since 1966. And are very much sought after as a teacher. Yet you long ago decided that you would combine such a career with being a wife and a mother and a cultural activist in this area. What kind of discipline do you impose upon yourself to accomplish all this? What price versatility?
Well, there are times when it's a bit of a strain, but I must say it's a life that I enjoy because I think that the world is so full of a number of things. We should all be as nervous as kings. I think that to do any one of these activities without some of the others would be really quite frustrating to me. I must say that I'm inclined to put off the practicing until the wee small hours of the morning, but that seems to be my lifestyle.
No, one can call you up at 1 a.m. and you're bound to be up.
Oh, you'll find me practicing, usually.
As the wife of Robert C. Weisskopf, who is himself an excellent musician and conductor of the Suburban Symphony of Cleveland, you are also known as a gregarious and hospitable person, a fine chef and homemaker, and as a speaker and interviewer, you're greatly in demand. And if all that were not enough, your piano playing, after all, can be matched against anybody's, both in technical accomplishment and interpretive interest. You certainly do honor to your early teachers, Betty Belkin and Francis Cortoya, and to your two great coaches, Arthur Rubinstein and Rudolf Serkin. Eunice, I'm sure We could talk for an hour easily, but the radio station can't quite permit this. There are limits even to that.
Well, we can go on after they cut us off the air.
Well, we probably shall. This area has been greatly enriched by you, and we are all most grateful to you. Thank you, Eunice Botis, and now back to Robert Conrad.